This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Sharitz and Shaoning. Now, the latest Malaysia retail industry report shows a higher projected growth in retail sales of 4.9% this year, and this is an upward revision compared to earlier estimates of 4.5% in March.
Yeah, so the report compiles estimates from members of the Malaysian Retailers Association. Now, all this figures can be attributed to the performance during the first quarter of the year. So we saw two events happening. We saw the Chinese New Year happening in the first quarter and Raya happening in the second quarter. So the retail industry achieved growth in the first quarter of 3.8% from the 2.6% a year ago. And then for the Raya festivities, they are expecting or projecting a higher growth rate of 5.5%.
However, not everyone is convinced of this rosy outlook because Murli Menon, Savills Malaysia Head of Retail Services, says that the current sentiment is one of conservative optimism. He said that the market is still sluggish with no major growth spike seen in the first half of the year. He did, however, observe a few trends. One is that athleisure fashion has continued to show healthy growth. He also noticed that beauty sector is growing. But in the F&B, he noted that some consolidation was going forward because of the high levels of competition in each subcategory. Now, with regards to departmental stores, they are projected to make a recovery from last year. It had been noted that they haven't been able to keep up with preferences of the market and the consumers. Menon of Savills highlighted that younger shoppers are more exposed to internet shopping and social media, and so expect much more when it comes to the shopping experience.
Now, retail group Parkson has weighed in as well, and they say that with the current economic landscape, the group will not be aggressively opening new stores. However, they will continue to monitor non-performing stores. According to them, brands have to rise to the shift in consumer spending, and they say that ultimately it comes down to the right product at the right price, packaged in a seamless online-to-offline experience. And I think that is really the key word here, experience. Because nowadays that you can get convenience more from the online scape than offline, people go to shops for the total package. You want to see the product, you want to experience the feel and the sale and the entire sales pitch. So in order to really keep drawing people to come to stores, stores have to remake themselves in order to provide that customer experience.
Yeah, so the role of stores have changed, isn't it? It's no longer about selling at the store. Sometimes it's about providing experience. It's about extending the brand that they already have. Because looking at the figures here, we're not seeing a sort of drop in consumer spending. People are spending. It's just that they're spending elsewhere, which is more online rather than at the shopping malls instead. And it's tough to compete because online stores, because of the overhead, a lot of, all these online retailers, they have very low overhead and they can sell their products much cheaper.
Yeah, we look back at the departmental stores, especially Parkson, which is a listed company in Malaysia, just to give you a colour and some indication of how difficult things have been. If you look at 2011, their market capitalisation at that time was 6 billion ringgit. Today, in 2019, their market cap is only 261 million ringgit. So that's a very sharp fall. They're actually loss-making. So if this is not an indicator of how very difficult departmental stores are, what kind of landscape they are facing, it's in the numbers, as I just mentioned.
And with regard to Parkson's, we've seen quite a number of high-profile outlets closing down over the past year or so, particularly the one in KLCC, which is now going to make way for, I believe, a smaller bazaar kind of outfit, so F&B areas as well. And I guess that just goes to show how difficult it is for them to compete. Because, for example, in the KLCC area, when Parkson was still in there, there were two major department stores within the same mall because it was Parkson and it was also Isetan. And Parkson was smaller and didn't provide, I think, the same variety, quite as much variety as Isetan did, and they really weren't doing very well prior to their closure.
Actually, we should look at China as an example of what the retail landscape might be. Because in China, in the 1990s, departmental stores were the way that people shopped. It was the first introduction to capitalism in communist China. But if you look at the typical high-class mall in Beijing today, the departmental store is no longer there. It's all a mixture of specialty shops and a lot of F&B, which is what we are seeing also in Kuala Lumpur today.
Yeah, and we can't downplay what impact technology has on the retail industry as well. For an example, earlier this morning, we were speaking about Stitch Fix, which is also, it's a new type of retail where it gets to find out the, specific details of, you know, of your preference and able to provide recommendations on the the type of clothes that you want. And all this are based on, you know, new technologies. For example, big data and AI, mm-hmm. just being able to collate all the things, all the information about you and give you quite a precise recommendation.
I guess it's the extension of the specialty store that you mentioned, Shanning, into the online space, because we've also talked about the new ways of marketing, so providing that bespoke experience to consumers and how that is becoming a lot more popular because people are looking for that personalized element to their shopping. And this is, so I guess this is why, you know, perhaps department stores, which tend to cater more to a slightly kind of ready to wear larger demographics,
household shopping
that no longer really fits into the mold of the specialty of the specialized personalized shopping experience, and that's partly why these have come down in recent years.
Another reason for this change in trends has actually been very much by the mall operators themselves, because if you look at how rents are actually charged, typically the master tenant, which used to be the departmental stores or even big cinemas, for example, they pay on average a much lower rate on a per square foot basis. But malls in the past used to say, okay, fine, we'll have one or two master tenants to make sure that all the space is occupied. But in the last few years, as some of these malls also where they have seen demand grow, they have decided to cut these master tenants because they pay much less mm-hmm. and instead make them into smaller unit sizes. So, for example, like in KLCC, it is said that some of these stalls in the concourse pay the most rent on a per square foot basis versus, let's say, a large tenant like Isetan or Zara.
Yeah, so I mean, those specialty shops that we were speaking about, I mean, perhaps if I could refer one, is for an example, the sales of soap. A lot of those specialty soaps that people sell online. So they start off online, but I think we cannot deny that need of someone needing to see those mm-hmm. goods physically, right? And again, this is when it relates to all this small bazaar-like specialty shops that mm-hmm. is going to open
well,
the retail
pop-up
malls.
Stores,
right?
Yeah.
For, and interestingly, it's like a little bit of a mix of both, because even a traditional online operator like Zalora has in the past had pop-up shops in malls, actually, where customers can actually have an idea of all the merchandise that they have. You couldn't actually buy anything, but you had an idea that they had these brands, they had these looks. So I guess brick and mortar is not dead. It's a bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think one last, we could definitely see some changes at the shopping mall, the types of services that they offer. Instead of just retail now, we're seeing a lot of kids' development centres and so forth. It's becoming very different. I mean, we're talking jungle gyms and family areas because yep. of, again, yep. our country being very hot. A lot of people still do like to spend time in the mall.
And at the same time, something I guess to note here is that there also could be rising property loan defaults, because the Star quoting sources says that the number of properties being auctioned, usually as a result of payment defaults, is expected to increase in the second half of this year. So year to date in 2019, auctioneer Ng Chan Mao & Co. estimates that about 18,000 units have been auctioned, valued at 9 billion ringgit, and 90% of these properties are residential units. This is already slightly more than half of what was auctioned in 2018.
Now, according to the 2018 auction report, the number of auction properties has spiked to about 32,000 units. That means that on average, 2,700 properties were put up monthly, roughly about 90 a day. In recent weeks, according to auctionlist.com, there were about 4,000 auction property listings, mostly residential. And according to Leong Auctioner, there's been a rise in auction properties valued between 500,000 ringgit to 1 million, unlike 10 years ago when properties were mostly below 500,000 ringgit.
Yeah, so this is the segment of property that has been mostly affected. And I think we have discussed quite a lot of it, because it does tie down to our discussion on affordable housing, for example, mm-hmm. which are properties below 300,000. And you could catch our conversation with a number of experts on this issue, for example, Dr. Soraya of Khazanah Research Institute, as well as most recently Carmelo Ferlito from Ideas, who have spoken on this subject. And you can catch them on BFM app as well as Spotify. Now, they're saying that, you know, these are the segments that were as an event of a miscalculated strategy by the property developers. And As a result, also, Carmelo Felito highlighted that this was partly as an intervention by the government, where they have flooded the affordable home sector, hence pushing property developers to look into other segments, which in this case would be the luxury home segment.
So I guess the fact that auctions are on the rise could be also an opportunity for people who would otherwise solely be limited to the affordable housing sector, because while auctions mean that some people are going to be losing these assets, perhaps because of a miscalculated investment, it is a buying opportunity for value hunters and investors as well. So Superior Wealth Group founder and CEO Dr. Alan Poon is suggesting that buyers with cash in hand should take advantage of the auction properties as they are lower reserve market price.
Now, Sharis, like as you mentioned, with the rise of the sales, of properties between above 500,000, this was very much due to the role of the developer's interest-bearing scheme, right, in about 10 years ago, and this spurred property sales. Now, many users, including speculators, they took advantage of this scheme, wanting to flip the properties when they were completed. And if you did look at some of the data in the last 10 years, you could do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But unfortunately, and recently, we have seen property prices, not collapsing, but not rising at all. So for the first time since maybe the financial crisis we faced in 1997, we might be seeing negative equity for property.
Yeah,
and not to forget that the central bank did put an end to the developer interest-bearing scheme as well, because due to worries of a property bubble as well as on the back of the fact that household debts were rising, and the glut in the property markets also contributed to the rise of properties put under the hammer.
Yeah, so we're looking about, if we look at the detail into the household debt, out of the 83%, 53.2% fall under the residential housing loan. So that is still high. And we fall very short. It's almost insignificant. Previously, we were at 85% in 2018 and just 0.2 point short.
Yeah, meanwhile, the overhang still continues. We still have about 32,000 units of unsold completed residential properties in 2018, valued at about 20 billion ringgit. And this is a 31% increase from 2017. The highest number of unsold completed units came from Johor with 6,000 units, a 39% year-on-year increase. And the unsold units are worth as much as 4.6 billion ringgit. Selangor was next, registering about 4,700 unsold units worth 4.2. And KL also saw a large spike in unsold properties, up almost three times to 2,800 units, valued at 2.7 billion ringgit.
And all right, that's all the business news we have for you for the moment. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.